Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 337 shopping days left until Christmas Day, and I believe you know what that means. That means it's time once again for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. Since 2015, this gravy train's been rolling, and we're jumping into season 5 this week. I guess it's the season, if we still go like the whole year, it still counts as a season, right? I don't know. That's how podcasting works these days. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your co-host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my good pals, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Hello.
Hey, John, what's happening?
I'm recording a podcast. What's up?
No, not a whole lot. I'm recording a podcast. Funny seeing you here. Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad, what's shaking?
Avocado toast.
Oh, baby, Mr. Classic Uninformed Millennial himself, Mr. Bradford, is wheeling and dealing in millennial touchstones. I love it. First things first, great, exciting news for the podcast. We have just been bought out by Big Podcast. We are now in, we are cogs in the machine. We are in the industry, so to speak. And that means one and only one thing, which means we're still allowed to do everything we used to do on the show. But the one big mandate from Big Podcast, no swearing, which is going to be rough, I feel like. Because
fuck this, I'm out.
And time.
That, a land speed record, 0.2 seconds. That's the John. Fastest any podcast has come and gone from a big name network. We did it, everybody.
You're going to get us kicked off Stitcher Christian.
I know.
I can't sell any more mattresses, man. I just can't.
Christian Mingle just did a big expose on us, and you just dumped all over it. I swear. I didn't even get to use the site. It's ridiculous.
I just saw it. It just hit our bank account. We got 3 cents in royalties, so each one of us gets a penny.
Wait. Hang on. I'm refreshing my page, and it's gone. They took it back.
Oh. We're ahead of the game. That's a penny more than I had this morning.
Carbon neutral podcasting here, folks. So we're back at zero. Anyway, yeah, hi. Welcome to 2019, everybody. Like I said, the fifth year of this podcast is kicking off to a fantastic start, I feel like. And this week on the show, we are kind of starting a tradition where last year we discussed the most recent Christmas hotness, right, fresh off of Netflix. And this year, I say Christmas hotness, it was Pottersville. But this year, we decided to do the same thing. But this year, I think the film is a little bit more entertaining, if not better.
Yeah, it doesn't have that air of Hallmark said hard pass on it like last year's did.
Yeah, this actually had a budget and somebody who did... He did the Santa Claus, right? This is Chris Columbus?
It's the 1492 Pictures. Which, yeah. Yeah, it's his. He's kind of attached to it to an extent of that he put his 1492 Pictures on it.
Hang on a second. Let's say the name of the film first. It's The Christmas Chronicles.
Yes.
produced by Chris Columbus, directed by Clay Cadis, who I just looked his name up. He was the director of the Angry Birds movie.
And literally nothing else.
And literally nothing else.
Can we just address the elephant in the room? Have either of you seen the Angry Birds movie?
Yeah, of course. If anybody who knows me on the internet knows I saw the Angry Birds movie.
Okay. It was brought to my attention that the Angry Birds drink urine on screen in the Angry Birds movie.
There is a pee drinking scene, yes.
Wasn't basically the entire message of the Angry Birds movie is that racial profiling is okay when you're correct?
Yes.
Whoa.
That is exactly what the plot of that movie is about. Or the
Are
theme,
you
rather.
Really serious? That was the...
Let me break it down for you real quick.
Okay.
So the red Angry Bird is the main character, and when the green pig people show up on the Angry Bird Island, he is the only one who's immediately suspicious of them. So while the pigs are yucking it up and partying on the Angry Bird Island, he sneaks onto their ship to discover they have serious evil ulterior motives, and no one believes him.
They're going to steal the eggs,
They're
right?
going to steal the eggs, yeah, and no one believes him until they steal the eggs.
I guess this technically... counted as video game chat, so trap sprung.
Trap sprung, everybody.
Okay. Anyways, the worst back part on
is,
track.
No, the worst part is that's not even an original story. That's basically like Rorschach's arc in Watchmen.
Kind of, yeah. The other thing about the Angry Birds movie, though, is that it was written by John Vitti, who was a longtime writer for King of the Hill. Specifically, he wrote the King of the Hill episode where Hank Hill gets raped by a dolphin.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
So I felt like they realized that this guy was uniquely qualified to write a movie about Angry Birds.
Oh.
Good Lord.
I want to talk about the writers real quick. The two guys credited with writing it, Matt Lieberman and David Guggenheim. Guggenheim is credited basically the only thing of note is the entirety of Designated Survivor. He created it.
Oh, wow.
And the other guy has a very short but very frightening IMDb list. He did Dr. Dolittle, Tale to the Chief, The Christmas Chronicles, then an Addams Family remake, then a couple other random things, then a Scooby-Doo remake, and then also a Short Circuit remake.
Good Lord. Wow. This guy is remake train hard, huh?
So now you have learned that they are, in fact, remaking Addams Family, Scooby-Doo, and Short Circuit.
I felt like with Addams Family, it was perfect the way it was. Please do not touch it. Thank you.
Addams Family, at least I'm interested in because I know it's animated and I know it's gonna have Oscar Isaac voicing Gomez, which I feel like is a perfect casting if you're gonna do it live action. But they said no, we're not gonna put him on screen. We'll just do his voice, which is kind of a missed opportunity if you ask me. But anyway, that's not the film we're talking about tonight. We need to talk about The Christmas Chronicles, which I feel somewhat conflicted about.
You chose this movie, and I was expecting multiple chronicles, but I was treated to only one chronicle.
That's something that, yeah, I definitely want to address, because the title is misleading.
The title is just bad garbage that they just came up with in a boardroom, and they couldn't come up with anything better.
Yeah, the title really is basically, what's another word that starts with CHR? That's...
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying we almost had a film called The Christmas? Until they realize that those are the same word. We can't have that. The Christmas Christopher, produced by Christopher Columbus.
And then we're going to be treated to, eventually, next year, they're going to release Christmas Chronicles X, and it's going to have better combat for the first half and have a great overworld, but then the combat's just going to be terrible. And then they're going to release Christmas Chronicles 2, which just everybody hates the main characters.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're going to get a remake of Christmas Chronicles X. It's called Christmas Chronicles XL. And it's going to have all the fighters that didn't appear in Christmas Chronicles X to begin with. It's going to
be
great.
With an extra DLC scene. Yes. No.
But
this
no Waluigi.
Is...
Never Waluigi.
The Christmas Chronicles featuring Hellboy. I love it.
Yes. Featuring Dante from the Devil May Cry series. So this is a movie that is... I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this movie.
Do either of you know, was this like something Netflix, is this a thing where it settled for Netflix for lack of actual release? Or was it actually planned to be for Netflix to begin with?
I believe it was part of their expansion and planned to be released, and they hyped it up as such.
Okay.
That's my understanding. Joe, you may have more of an inside track as to the development of this film, but that's
know is that like one of the first like press releases they put out for the film was purely just like, hey, like Netflix announcing, hey, we've got Kurt Russell to star as Santa Claus in our next big Christmas movie.
Okay,
so I feel like this might have been produced like specifically for Netflix.
Because if you look at Bird Box, that has didn't make it to the theaters written all over it.
Right. And either... like last year when Cloverfield Paradox came out, everybody kind of rightly deduced that it was because they sold it to Netflix because nobody wanted to put it in theaters.
Yeah.
Brad, you were asking a question?
I was asking if you've seen Bird Box.
I have seen Bird Box.
I have not.
I cannot comment much on it because it kind of glanced right off me.
All right.
It's
fair enough.
It's okay. It is perfectly okay. Just like this film. I feel like this film is perfectly okay, but there is plenty worth discussing in it because, oh my goodness, this thing goes some places.
Yeah.
So the right. Like, okay, let's just jump straight into talking about like what the film is and just shotgun blast out from there, I guess. So the film opens with a series of, it's basically video diaries of this family who every Christmas they, you know, videotape the kids opening their Christmas gifts on Christmas morning. And we, it goes from like Christmas Day of 2006 all the way up to 2018.
Yeah. And about 2009, I was like, oh God, this is a dead mom movie. But I was wrong.
You were half wrong.
It's a dead dad movie.
It's a
dead dad.
Dead dad
so
movie.
So what?
Dad, the long and short of it was like dad was a firefighter and he died on duty the year before the film takes place.
Yes.
And so we get
sometime in 2017.
Right. So we got the two kids. Teddy's the older brother and he is kind of been disillusioned by the fact that he's lost his dad. And then Kate is the younger sister who is still sort of attached to this video camera that her dad used to have. And she's still like making video diaries. And
so she's about 10 or 11, which do you feel that's a bit too old? Like realistically, does it still be on the Santa train?
Yup. But well, it actually, the movie addresses this because apparently the mom is still on the Santa train as well. Yeah. And everybody except for Teddy is still on the Santa train.
Well,
which is a weird thing.
I kind of feel like a lot of movies do this where they have kids still on the Santa train a little bit older than they maybe should be. I think more for sort of production and story reasons, because like if Kate is a 6-year-old, you wouldn't be doing any of the stuff that she does in this film.
I'm just imagining this with like Michelle Tanner and it's just read a line, mug for the camera, read a line, mug for the camera.
You so, got it.
Probably
dude.
For the best.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, we suspend our disbelief a little bit, and a lot of movies that feature Santa kind of do this, where everybody's believing in Santa because he actually exists in this universe. Spoiler alert.
But that's kind of the thing, too. It's like every movie that features Santa Claus is like a real person. I think you kind of buy that like older kids still believe in Santa because, well, he is actually real in this universe, so why not?
In this universe. So, yeah. Alternate universe. Did anybody, I might be the only one, speaking of other Netflix originals, Kate, ostensibly the main character,
yeah,
maybe Santa, is basically Tiny Kimmy Schmidt.
I didn't get that vibe, but I see where you're coming from, at least.
Like the Hope Springs Eternal, I think it's also just her look, like the redhead Wendy's Ambergesa lady kind of look.
She's a little more clear-headed, I think, than Kimmy Schmidt is. Like, she has no illusions about the world.
Yeah.
So she's a little more, a better of a protagonist, I guess. But this...
I guess.
That show and this movie are different beasts, so we can't really...
Yeah. Can we talk about the true Christmas miracle and that a camcorder from 2006 is still in operating condition in 2018?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Especially when it uses tapes and is not solid state.
Yeah.
That thing would have been broken by like 2011 at best.
Especially once the kids got their hands on it.
Oh yeah, this camera takes a beating throughout this entire movie, and yet it's somehow still working.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's a function of the fact that like it was dad's camera, so they try to hold on to it for sentimental reasons.
It is a special object.
Yes, it is a special magical object as far as the kids are concerned.
Yes. Okay. So dad dies, and Christmas is never the same because he was the one who did all of the decorations in the house and did all the special stuff.
Right.
Mom is working nights because she is a nurse, I guess.
And she works at the hospital, so she has
to
work on
Christmas.
We
don't get more
night.
Information than that. She may be a physician. Who knows? Anyways.
Yeah, the whole being called in for bullshit, like, hey, we need someone on Christmas Eve and you have no choice, that smacks of nurse.
Doctors
usually have a little bit more clout to be like, no, that's a terrible idea. I'm going back to sleep.
Yeah.
Short version is, like, we need an excuse for mom to exit the movie for the next hour and a half.
Yeah. So Teddy is acting out because his father has died, and Kate catches him in the act of stealing a car and films it.
And proceeds
and
to blackmail him.
Essentially blackmails him.
So... were they like just stealing the car just to screw around, or were
I think so? Yeah,
like, they weren't.
I think
it was like
some
chop shop thing. They were just joyriding, right?
Yeah, it was a joyride sitch, I believe.
And hey, I have some experience with this because my car was recently stolen. So as soon as I saw this in the film, I just immediately wrote Teddy off completely. Like, he doesn't deserve the redemption arc that he gets because I know what it feels like to have your car stolen.
Yes.
So that's just me.
No, he's not great for most of the film.
Yeah, I would say Teddy's friends are totally the type of kids that will say like the soft A N-word, but they look around for like 5 minutes before they do it, just to make sure no one is around.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But then, all right. But meanwhile, Kate, she produces a letter to Santa in the form of a videotape, but she like records herself asking Santa for a gift for Christmas. She asks Santa for a skateboard, and then she says Teddy doesn't think skateboards are for girls.
So Teddy is also a misogynist.
Yes. So like another mark against Teddy. Like, we're just building the case against Teddy. Like, hate this kid. Anyway.
And to play Teddy's advocate, I would imagine that his line is more, no, they're not for girls, therefore you're not borrowing mine. And the therefore you're not borrowing mine is the action here.
It's absolutely a means to an end. I mean, it's a little sister, big brother thing.
Sure. Maybe I'm just uniquely grudging against Teddy.
No, it's fair.
It's perfectly fair. So Teddy is forced to babysit Kate on Christmas Eve while Mom is out at the hospital. And Kate, looking through these old tapes, or she's watching a tape of Christmas past, Mom and Dad and the kids and everything. And she catches something out of the corner of the frame. And it's like it's a Santa Claus hand reaching down and putting a gift under the tree right as people leave the frame.
And she catches it because there's a jingling noise with it because Santa is stealthy as hell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Santa is the solid snake of the Christmas universe. God, we cannot stop bringing in video games into this, I swear.
No, it makes sense because Kurt Russell is Snake Plissken. So
you're right.
Oh.
Wow. It makes perfect sense, yeah. So Kate basically blackmails Teddy into helping her catch Santa on video. And indeed they do. Not only do they catch him on video, they find his sleigh and sneak aboard it and
ruin everything.
Literally ruin everything.
So, long story short, they cause Santa to crash over Chicago, and he loses both his reindeer, his magic hat, his sack of toys, and the sled is destroyed. They're on the naughty list forever, according to Santa. Oh, by the way, this Santa, he's a little rougher around the edges than we usually see.
He's pretty grizzly and pretty funky, and I kind of love him.
I mean, I'm not upset about it. It's this movie, basically, the whole premise, even if you watch the trailers, is what if Santa, but a tiny bit cooler and more savvy?
What if Santa was cool now?
Yeah, because
that was pretty much it.
Otherwise, it's just a standard Christmas movie. It was like that joke Jon Stewart made years ago. Every Christmas movie is just, oh no, there's not going to be Christmas. But wait, and that's all this movie is. It's just a Christmas crisis again.
Pretty much, and that's exactly how they sold the film too. The kids and the whole plot, nothing is about it that is relevant. It's just all about Santa Claus is slam dunking gifts down Christmas trees and singing blues music, and he is awesome. That's how they sold this movie. And it's like the kids first meet Santa Claus, and they're like, Santa Claus? And he says, live it in person, one night only.
It's not terrible. I think Kurt Russell, he's having fun. It's all right.
I will straight up say it. He saves this movie.
It could have been so much worse.
He's the sole redeeming grace of this movie.
if not for this Kurt Russell being in this movie.
Oh, this would have been an awful movie.
It would have been a slog. I don't know that I would have made it, honestly.
Yeah, it's other than that, it's your usual, made for TV / Netflix kind of trite.
Right. It's there's not a whole lot separating it from The Santa Claus with Tim Allen.
And I don't think because Tim Allen was trying to pull off the same thing. And it just doesn't work.
Tim Allen is so much more mean-spirited just in his own, like, just nature.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this Santa, he's like cool with cons.
But anyway, so this is the point in the film where I kind of realize what the story was going to be. It's basically Adventures in Babysitting, but with Santa Claus.
It's like, in Chicago, there's a blues number, etc.
Yeah, so it's almost literally Adventures in Babysitting with Santa Claus, which makes sense because this is a Chris Columbus movie. But the first thing they do, they need to find the reindeer and the sleigh. So Santa takes the kids to just some random bar. I think it's called Nick's Place or something.
Yeah, he
like
takes
that.
It because it's called Nick's Place.
And right away, we kind of see how this Santa Claus works, because he immediately starts appealing to literally everybody in the bar by call, like he knows them on a first name basis, because of course he does. He knows exactly like what they've been up to in their life, because of course he does. And nobody kind of either one person believes him. It's the hostess, and she like helps him out. Nobody else in the bar helps him out because they're like, "Get away from me, old man. We're trying to have dinner." And they wind up stealing a car that was already stolen by the bartender, I guess. It's a little overwritten, to be honest. But the point being, they steal a car that was already stolen, go cruising through the streets of Chicago looking for the reindeer, and then they get stopped by the cops. And Santa has to like explain to them. He tries to make them believe that he's Santa Claus, and of course, Jay Farrow believes him, but the other cop doesn't so much. And they take him downtown and book him and all that fun stuff. Meanwhile, Teddy and Kate go off on their own way with the reindeer. Kate finds the reindeer. She like makes friends with Comet by feeding it a candy cane, because early in the film, Mom establishes that like reindeers love candy canes, which in my mind makes me think that kids are going to start going up to reindeers and trying to feed them candy canes, and that's not going to end well.
The North Pole is just full of reindeer diarrhea.
Yeah, there's a diabetic epidemic at the North Pole, and it starts with candy canes being fed to the reindeer.
If we learned anything from the Santa Claus, isn't that the one where they eat a bunch of candy and they can't fly or whatever? Santa Claus?
I don't know where you pulled that one from.
Is that one of the Santa Buddies? Actually, I know what he's talking about. It's a movie where the reindeer like eats too much candy. Is just like, bah. Or I think it is Santa Buddies because the stupid dogs have to pull the sleigh.
I thought it was Santa. Yeah, no, it might be Santa Buddies.
I think it's Santa Claus 2 you're thinking of. Where
yep, it is, yep, Santa Claus 2.
Where Comet literally eats too much candy and cannot fly.
Which is one of our lost episodes, by the way.
We'll get there.
The big lost episode, yeah.
Oh, that was such a fun episode.
Yeah, once we, like, Eternal Sunshine that movie out of our brains, we'll watch it again.
Yeah, yes. Give it a couple more years, I guess. So yeah, the kids fly off with the reindeer. Santa Claus, meanwhile, is downtown being interrogated by the cops. And he has this great little scene where he's trying to appeal to the cops' sort of, I guess, sense of Christmas spirit by telling, you know, the cops, like, all right, what do I want for Christmas? And he's...
It actually, probably the biggest laugh I had in this movie is the scene where he's in the interrogation room. And he just starts pulling toys out of his vest. He's like, oh, ooh. And it's like, there's like a Snoopy astronaut and a Star Wars figurine and a Hot Wheels. It's very good.
But it's not, they're not just any toys. They're specifically the toys that this cop asked for as a child and did not receive.
Is it's Doug. Or, no, wait, not Doug. Doug's the dad. What's the name of the cop? The main cop, the skeptic cop. I forget.
I want to say it's Officer Poveda. I'm looking through the IMDb list here.
Yeah, but he refers to him by his first name throughout most of it.
I don't see the name here. Anyway.
Well, anyways, he reveals that he's like, well, what do I want for Christmas this year? And he goes, Lisa, and which is this gentleman's ex-wife. And yeah. He's still being very skeptic, and he thinks that this guy is just, you know, a creep who's dressed up in a Santa suit who, you know, hacked into his personal info or whatever.
Some sort of Christmas creep, it appears.
Some sort of Christmas creep.
And he even says, like, look, buddy, this is not a good look for you. You stole a car, you've got kids that aren't your own, and also it appears that you are, you know, hacking personal information from the internet and blackmailing people with it. Like, they could lock him away for life if they really wanted to.
It's a good scene, to the credit of both of these actors, because it's like, it might be the best tension in the movie, with a movie with absolutely no stakes or tension whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because you feel like this officer is like on the cusp of believing him at every single moment, and then he kind of snaps back to reality. He's like, nah, this can't be. So.
Right, and Santa even points out, like, you know, that's what makes him a good cop, is that he still has that kind of skeptical brain,
yeah,
running in the background.
So he puts him in the pen, he puts him in the drunk tank.
And then who happens to be there for basically no reason at all?
Stephen Van Sant is in jail.
Little Steven Van Zandt is in jail, yes. And so Santa decides, okay, also what we should have mentioned is that once again, like a lot of other Santa movies, the Christmas spirit meter is dropping, you know, drastically. And like Santa has a giant watch on his hand that like tracks Christmas spirit.
This is an interesting, I thought this was really more interesting than a lot of ostensibly children's Christmas movies. The stakes are much higher than kids won't get presents. The stakes for this movie is Santa and Christmas spirit are literally the only thing preventing the Dark Ages and World War III. which I thought is a very interesting premise for a movie.
So Santa's mission is basically to crib a line from Pacific Rim to cancel the apocalypse.
Pretty much. He's the only thing like holding the status quo. So, which is...
It's interesting. So Christmas and Santa Claus are the only things keeping humanity from just tearing itself apart.
I kind of love it. You know, of course it's cheeseball and it's the worst, but it's also kind of
it's extremely the silly, best. But it's a great explanation. But also, like the way he describes it, he says like as the Christmas spirit meter starts to drop, crime rates will start to go up and more bad things will start to happen. And I kind of wish that like we saw more bad things happen. Like as the Christmas meter reaches zero, the purge starts to happen, you know, but we don't get to see any of that. It's kind of like
you get a little bit of it because he's like, oh, this is the busiest. They're at the precinct. And he's like, this is the busiest Christmas has been in years. And that's kind of about it.
Right. But it kind of reminds me of Ghostbusters 2 a little bit, because like the more bad vibes there are in New York, in the city, the worse the pink slime starts to get and the more ghosts start to show up. That's kind of the same sort of mechanic, I guess. But we don't really ever get to see a whole lot of what's going on out in the larger world, except for the fact that like Teddy gets jumped by some local hoodlums after he discovers Santa's bag of toys just sitting in a tree in a park.
Yeah, so we're treated to this weird like gang of thieves, fury fast and like I don't even know what this deal is. Like they go to a safe house where there's pinball machines and there's some guy working with like a welding tool like, or something.
The later scene shows that there's like 300 people in this chop shop apparently, but we kind of skipped over the part where they get the brother and sister get back together. They find Santa's bag. She climbs into it and disappears from like a vortex to the North Pole, and that's how he gets caught alone with the bag. Which I want to say something interesting. This movie was filmed in Toronto, like very obviously, and it takes place in Chicago. And one thing, like, in this scene, I was thinking about it because I was like, they're filming this on the street. I wonder if they actually, you know, if you can point out, like, aha, this is totally Toronto. It's not Chicago. And they were in front of an Indochino store, and they were at St. James Cathedral. And both of those things exist, those name things exist in both Chicago and in Toronto, which I thought was kind of a very happy accident on their part.
I mean, that's a good way of
give the location scouting people a little bit of credit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to mask sort of. Production.
Yeah, because as soon as I saw Indochino, I was like, I'm going to look and see where Indochinos are and see if there's actually one in Chicago. And there are a couple in Toronto and a couple in Chicago.
Yeah.
And if you compare, like, the facades of the Cathedral St. James of Chicago and Toronto, they're at the Toronto one, very blatantly. But, yeah, it was still either the stupidest luck imaginable or someone was kind of paying attention on this movie. It could go either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really six of one, half dozen of the other. So basically, Kate crawls into Santa's bag, which exists in this weird Hammer Space kind of universe where all the gifts are floating around in this sort of strange nebulous zone. And she makes it her way to the North Pole in Santa's workshop where all these CGI elves start to appear. And this is the point where the film kind of starts to take a downward turn for me.
Absolutely. The CGI elves are terrible, just as bad as you would imagine. And this is where it takes a firm turn into what you expected when you heard about this movie land.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as they showed up in the trailer, we were like, oh no. And then here they are.
If they had kept these elves out and had kind of kept the same arc that they were working with throughout the first half of this movie, I would feel a lot better about this movie.
Yeah.
You kind of watch it and you're like, this is better than I expected. Oh, this is exactly what I expected as soon as they show up. I will say, though, I at least it would have been worse, I think, if they had, like, if they did like the Santa Claus did and just had a bunch of kids playing old people, basically.
Yes.
That's true. Yeah. But at the same time, like, the elves are, like, these little CGI... They're basically minions. And they speak elvish, but it's like... basically like Germanic gibberish
kind of like pidgin.
Well, for some reason they actually went and got the Game of Thrones language guy who's done like all those construction languages to make this one.
Oh wow.
So
yeah, Kate and the elves, they do their thing to go find Santa Claus. I don't remember exactly what it is they're doing, their plot is, but meanwhile, oh no, they have to go rescue Teddy. Yes, Teddy's been jumped by these hoodlums.
Their plot is just the elves know what to do.
Yeah the elves break out of the bag after Teddy saves it from an incinerator in the chop shop, and the elves chase off all of the thugs exactly how you expect, because this movie has gone into exactly how you expect land.
It becomes kind of a Gremlins movie for like two minutes.
Yep, and they're about to dismember Teddy, which is very good, but then they stop.
They almost chainsaw his dick off.
Yup.
Weird turn for a Netflix Christmas movie, I have to say.
Yeah, really.
All right.
But yeah, long story short, they go to break out Santa Claus, but before they break out Santa Claus tries to raise the Christmas spirit in the city by performing a music number in the jail cell. Like, he gives little Steven a guitar, the other guy who's with him, I forget his name, he gets a guitar. All the ladies that are in there, who presumably are like prostitutes, they are like the backup singers, and he performs Santa Claus is Back in Town, which is extremely appropriate, given that Kurt Russell once played Elvis in a movie, because this is an Elvis song.
Can I just say, the scene is pretty good, but is made even better by the fact that after the rescue happens with Teddy and Kate, they're like, oh, poor Santa, he's in jail, he must be miserable, and then they smash cut, and he's still, like, in the middle of his musical number, just having the time of his life.
Yeah, he's kind of having a ball. Yeah.
Like, Santa's just like, I'm in Chicago, what are you slobs like? Oh, the Blues Brothers, we'll just do that.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, he's wearing shades. He's like hammering on a piano. It's fun.
I think it's the first time anybody could ever potentially say Santa Claus is cool.
Yes.
And even then, I feel weird saying that. Santa Claus is not cool.
Santa Claus is what like a 50-year-old white guy thinks is cool.
Yeah, basically.
Oh boy.
So they bust Santa Claus out of jail and they deliver the last presents at warp fucking speed.
Yep.
Because Santa Claus's sleigh generates wormholes that helps him get from city to city to city in the span of seconds.
He's got stargates, and for a moment they're like, I only have a little bit of North America left, and my bullshit meter went off. But then I realized, well, no, if you start from the international dateline, it more or less holds together, because they encountered him in Massachusetts, and that means he would have finished all of Asia and Africa and Europe and Australia and Oceania and what, you know, he only has North America left. They do leave out South America, which he should technically cover if he's going by time zone, but we're not going to get into that.
Right, because the last, like, they discovered that the last gift that needs to be delivered that they forgot is in Mexico City, so they have to, like...
Mexico City. And I want to give the movie a little credit for not pulling off the bullshit that we've seen in every single children's Christmas movie, where Santa has to save the day by going super fast, where they just do basically, they go down the checklist of, okay, what are all the most popular countries? Let's do those. Because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, just like, oh, here's a kid in Lederhosen. Here's a kid in something else stereotypical. Here's a kid in something that's just outright racist.
Here's a dog that we put a dreadlock hat on.
Because not only is it kind of a little bit racist, but also it kind of implies that Santa Claus missed all of these to begin with.
Yeah, but also I don't like it. I don't like it. In fact, I'm going to mark my words. I'm going to go back through these movies that we've watched, and assuming that they're not cutting between the order, it doesn't make any sense. Like, they'll do Europe, then they'll do Japan, then they'll do Jamaica, then they'll do the U.S.
Oh, don't worry. They did that in this movie, too, because if you watch Santa's little city meter, it goes from Anchorage to Honolulu to Boise.
Oh my good. Well, I mean that makes sense, because at least it's all within like three or four hours of each other.
Yeah.
But if you have a montage where you're delivering presents and it's already Christmas Day somewhere else.
Do you think Santa Claus Do you think Santa Claus uses great circle navigation to get around? So, like the way he does, like the way the airplanes do.
Christmas magic. I mean, I'm sure he. Well, it depends on the whole paramilitary crap that we see in these movies too. But
yeah, I know. But I'm just not only does he use like the wormhole shit that he does, but he's also like probably trying to triangulate the best, like the shortest distance between two cities. Because we do see it at one point, like he triangulates his position after the sleigh crashes by just like looking at the stars and goes, "This is there, that's there, that's there. Oh, I must be in Chicago."
Yeah.
So I don't know. This Santa Claus strikes me as smart enough gentleman to be able to do that. I don't know.
All right, so let's wrap this up in a nice bow. They deliver the last present in Mexico City with seconds to spare, and Santa gives this nice little girl a glimpse of him before he disappears while eating a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
They land back down, and Santa drops them off. He gives Teddy a hat right before he takes off and right before their mom returns from work. They hug because they're the siblings love each other again because they've come to a mutual understanding and have come to grips with the death of their father.
But also the kids realize, or they tell Santa that, oh, we forgot to get mom something for Christmas. And Santa's like, I think I can do something about that. He touches his nose. And then when the kids and mom go inside the house is perfectly beautifully decorated the way dad used to decorate it.
Yep. And she says this is the best gift ever.
And then Teddy, we didn't mention this about Teddy. Teddy also wrote, Kate discovers that Teddy wrote Santa a letter, even though Teddy is too old to believe in Santa Claus. But he specifically wrote Santa a letter saying that he wishes he could see his dad again. And under the tree, there is a gift for Teddy, and it's a Christmas ornament from Santa Claus. And Santa wrote Teddy a letter, and the kid's like baffled. They're like, huh, Santa wrote me back, which is nice.
You just saw the man in the flesh. Yeah, this is not a big deal.
This is not a big deal. Well, he's also like performing this for mom, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's a Christmas ornament, and Santa's like, this is the best I can do. So he puts the ornament on the tree, and he looks at the ornament, and then he sees his dad inside the ornament, and he tells his dad that he's
Harry
proud.
Harry Potter remember all is what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It was a Harry Potter thing.
Oh, yes. See, this is all Chris Columbus movies at once. It's a little bit of Avengers and Babysitting. It's a little bit of Gremlins. It's a little bit of Harry Potter. No Home Alone in this movie whatsoever.
No, there was Home Alone. They set up traps for Santa.
Oh, shit. You're right. Yeah. You're right.
Okay.
This is the Columbus movie, okay?
Yeah, it is. It really is the pastiche.
All we need now is some... Well, we talked plenty about video games, so we got pixels in there, too. Hooray!
Can I... Okay. So I need to mention one thing, which I didn't get a chance to, which is Kate blackmails Teddy. And this is the whole reason they find out Santa is she blackmails him into setting up traps and setting up a camcorder to discover Santa. And they're like, all right, we're going to pull an all nighter. This is a stakeout. These kids fall asleep at 10:30, stone cold asleep because there's a timestamp on the camcorder.
That's what I wrote in my notes too, of like, everyone in the world is asleep on Christmas Eve at 10:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Except for people in a bar in Chicago, but I guess that's what, an hour back? Chicago Central, right?
Yeah.
So it's 9:30 then. Yeah. But whatever.
But there, and that's that scene though, there's a great visual gag where like once Teddy's all in on the "we gotta catch Santa" plot, he says like, "Well, we need some snacks if we're gonna pull one all nighter." And he comes into the closet, and he's just got like food coming out of every single pocket that he has. It's kind of great, like giant tubs of ice cream, Cheez-Its.
Yeah, she's like, "Mom said no junk food. If Mom says no junk food, why do you guys have like movie theater boxes of like Milk Duds sitting in your house?"
Yeah.
Why do you have like three giant tubs of Edie's ice cream?
Well, I mean. I have three packages of Bomba downstairs that are calling my name constantly, but that doesn't mean I go and eat them all the time. I do have those in reserve.
That's true.
For movie night.
That's true.
But
I just like the sheer volume of junk food that he brings into the room is kind of hilarious.
It's staggering. It's amazing. All right.
But yeah, so that's the Christmas Chronicles. Oh, the very, very, like, very last scene, Santa Claus goes back home. And the missus comes home and she says, oh, I heard you had a pretty eventful night tonight. And it turns out that the missus is Goldie Hawn, which...
Yeah, Kurt Russell's apparently terms was like, literally anyone in my family who wants to show up can be in this movie too. Because Doug is Goldie Hawn's son and Kate Hudson's kid is being Bellamy, the kid who wants a snowboard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't know that. So this is kind of a family affair for Kurt Russell. That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah, because I was making fun of the kid's name, just saying there's a kid named Bing Bellamy in this movie, and Karen was like, "Oh, that's Kate Hudson's son with the guy from Muse."
All right,
cool. The very last thing is like the Mrs. Claus says, "Hey, we should watch a movie for Christmas Eve. How about it's, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street," and then Santa Claus pulls the tape from Kate's camcorder and says, "Nope, I've got a better idea." And
so you're going to watch a kid's home movie of yourself.
Yeah, a kid's home movie of you terrorizing Chicago. Great. Okay, so this brings up an interesting point, and I guess we're kind of transitioning now to the second part of our show here, where I want to ask y'all a question.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you think this movie should have been a found footage movie instead?
So there's the scene where they're exiting the house to go look at the sleigh, and it gets found footage for a second.
I kind of have a feeling that like this was originally envisioned as a found footage movie where like two kids try to catch Santa Claus on Christmas Eve with their camcorder.
She is recording throughout a lot of this movie. However, I feel that found footage is best used when you want to keep something vague, like with Cloverfield, and it's not good when it's
The reason Blair Witch Project worked with found footage is because if it wasn't found footage, it would just be like, oh no, there's spooky sticks in the trees. Cool.
Yeah. It'd just be a bunch of teens losing their shit in the woods, and that's kind of it.
No, and I agree with y'all. Like, I don't think this would have worked as a found footage, but I get the sense that this was like that was the original idea.
Like the elevator pitch was found footage Santa movie, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think you're right, and they realized that it wouldn't work.
Right, they realize that like if we keep this found footage, we have to stay with one person or at least the camera the whole time, and we're never going to get certain scenes like Santa Claus singing a song in prison.
Well, wait. Well, no, maybe wait, it's not.
Hang if on, you cut yeah. back to like the what's the dude from The Matrix, the architect who has all the monitors?
Oh yeah.
If you just cut back to an elf going back and forth between like the camcorder and like security footage from the police station,
that might be so friggin' annoying.
Idea, oh, but it would be so terrible though. Yeah.
No, you've found the reason. You found the way to do it. But then there comes the question, should they do it? Should they have done
no.
it?
No.
the answer to that is a qualified no.
Yeah.
But no, I forgot about that. Yeah, because like Kate finds in Santa's workshop the wall of TV screens where all the kids who have sent Santa video letters are playing at the same time on the screen. So it's possible that the elves could like tap into the police station feed and watch Santa Claus playing his song, but it wouldn't be staged well because the camera would be up in the corner and it just wouldn't look great. And I get the feeling that like there's a way to do it, but the way that this movie kind of plays itself, it wouldn't be very cinematic.
Yeah, you'd either run into a problem of just you're watching the entire scene from the corner like some Paranormal Activity nonsense, or it's like, oh, the security camera has shot reverse shot. That's cool.
Yeah, that's weird. This makes me start to wonder what a movie like that would actually look like. Like, okay, so you've got Santa Claus sitting in his jail cell. The security camera is on him, and the whole film is basically the premise of this guy thinks he's Santa Claus. Will magical things happen while we watch him? Let's find out and wait. Like, I don't know. Anybody who's out there listening who is an enterprising student filmmaker, here, this is a free idea for you. Like, make a found footage Santa Claus movie. I would watch it. Honestly.
First one's free.
The first one's free.
I want a developer credit.
Yeah, associate producer for me.
I have a stipulation. You have to make this found footage Santa Claus movie and not just turn it into, oh, it's really Krampus type of horse shit.
Right. There can't be a monster. That's the easy way out. That's cheating, I feel like.
It's the cop-out. All right.
I also feel like there should have been a found footage Krampus by now, you know?
No.
I don't know.
We don't need any more Krampus movies.
Mark my words, there will be a found footage supernatural horror Christmas movie. If there is not one already, there will be one within 10 years.
Right, if there is one...
If we're not all dead before 2029...
All right. If there is one that you know of and we're not thinking of it, leave us a comment in the show notes.
Yes, please do let us know because we will do that.
The other factor here in this discussion is I think found footage movies are played out and probably nobody was going to make it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Good rinse to bad rubbish, honestly.
Kind of, sort of, yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does every movie that does this Santa techno magic thing think they're being clever and they're the first ones to do it?
Yes.
I feel like this one's not as... I mean, it's techno magic.
But it's just but like, he's got, it's, like... Santa has all this magic, but this magic takes, like, shows itself in, like, glowing green lights and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. Stargate and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I did like the thing where he was, like, hacking the radio to get the police scanner. Like, yeah. That's good. Like, more like that. More like that, please.
Yeah, where the elves can...
Santa does not...
Sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Like, where the elves can sort of magic themselves a device out of just, like, jerry-rigging random pieces of crap. Like, sure, I buy that.
Yes.
I buy that much more than Santa just having a green glowing globe on his sleigh that will, like, on the press of a button, send him to wherever he wants.
Yes. Yes.
Because that,
and I guess that gets us more into, like, Arthur Christmas, where it's like, oh, nothing's magic, it's all just tech, but there's got to be, like, a good balance between the two, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, where he's just like, he's like a tech savant, and he's great.
Right, because like there's that famous line. It's like any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So like Santa Claus and his elves have more technology than we can comprehend. Therefore, we must think it's magic.
Yeah,
but when we actually see them doing it and using it, no, it's basically magic.
It is magic.
Yeah, but
there's a lot of magic in this movie.
But I do kind of appreciate...
And I don't mean that in the flattering way.
No, yeah. But I do kind of appreciate that, like, they're able to use the magic to, I guess do it in a way that we haven't seen before. Like, the whole, like, Santa sleigh in a wormhole kind of thing is unique. And it's a good...
He's got a bag of holding.
Yeah, he's got a bag of infinite holding. I don't know. All of the Santa Claus stuff worked for me more than basically the entire plot surrounding it did.
Yeah.
Especially like just Santa using his knowledge of literally everybody to get into their good graces. Like, I kind of loved that part of his character because of course Santa would do that.
Yeah, it's the Santa Claus did it too, but Tim Allen ruins everything he touches, so...
Yes. Mm-hmm. I will say this. I did like that this Santa was, like, willing to wheel and deal when he, like, he's getting desperate in the bar, and he comes up to a guy and gives him... He's offering him a baseball card for his car. I thought that was super great. And it's like, I feel like you wouldn't get that in a lot of Christmas movies with Santa.
Right. Or then Santa like, tries to
being a little more of a realist.
Exactly. And like Santa tries to commandeer a car, the car that was previously stolen, and then Teddy says like, "We can't steal a car." And Santa's like, "What? It's already stolen."
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're going to return it to the precinct after we're done.
Yeah, which is what he says. Yeah.
I have one question about this though. So Santa can pull whatever anyone wants out of his pocket pretty much.
Sure.
Yeah.
What about what Santa wants?
Well, here's the thing. It's revealed at the end that he didn't need the hat to turn into dust or whatever. So, yeah, so all of this was so Santa's...
Santa was just like, well, we need to have a Christmas movie. Might as well pretend.
Yeah, that's exactly... It actually goes to that. And it annoyed me a little bit because it's like the whole thing. Santa quote-unquote jeopardized Christmas just to reunite these two kids or whatever.
It didn't explicitly say that, though. In a worse movie, like Christmas Shoes, that would be the text, not the subtext.
Yeah, but it is the subtext where he could have broken out of jail anytime he wanted. He could have pulled any item he wanted out. But the purpose he did this, I guess, is ostensibly to give these kids what they need, and also, I guess, it's what the mom wants for Christmas. So he's you know, masterminded. You know, puppeteered this entire movie into happening, more or less.
Well, now that you put it that way, I hate this movie.
Well, if you read the subtext, that's exactly what it is.
Well, no, I mean, it's not like Santa like engineered a scheme whereby the kids would try to stay up late to catch him on video. Therefore, they would try to steal his sleigh. No, like that's not.
How do you know? How do you know that, okay. Joe?
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But also, like,
I am very glad the movie does not spell that out. I'll just say that.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't spell it out, but he does imply at the end of the film that he could have magicked himself out of literally any of the situations that they found themselves in.
But let me hit you with this. Like, the fact that the hat goes missing and that becomes, like, a plot point, it feels more to me like... Santa Claus needs the hat to complete the image of him being Santa Claus, because that's what generates Christmas spirit, is like people all really believing in him. So like once he has the hat, the illusion is complete.
So the hat is kind of like Clark Kent's glasses.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, without the hat, he's just some jackass in a Santa costume.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Okay. Okay. So all right. I don't know. I kind of found this was more fun than I was expecting, but not quite as good as I was hoping.
It exceeded my extremely low expectations for whatever that's worth.
Absolutely, that is exactly how I feel about this movie.
Like, it's perfectly okay, but there's going to be that constant nagging feeling in the back of my head that just wishes it was more. There were more scenes of Santa Claus like slam dunking gifts down chimneys and less scenes of Teddy getting jumped by the Fast and the Furious.
There's a lot of untapped potential in this movie.
Yeah. And what I will say is this, this was kind of a big hit for Netflix. Apparently, if you believe like Netflix is kind of potentially bogus, like numbers that they put out, this was a big hit.
So Netflix's numbers are absolute trash. I mean, even if they're being accurate, they're absolute trash because they're being presented in the absolute wrong way. Of course, a Netflix original is going to have high numbers because people are sitting around Christmas Eve being like, what are we going to do? Oh, hey, watching something on Netflix is cheaper than going to the theater. Oh, what's playing? I haven't seen this before. Cool.
That's exactly what they're banking on. That's what they were banking on with this. It just makes common sense from a business standpoint. So the long and short of it is we are going to be treated to The Christmas Chronicles X.
That's what I'm saying. That's kind of what I'm hoping, is that if we get a sequel, we're going to get, if anything else, we're going to get more of this Santa Claus, which is really all I want anyway.
My brain is broken. It's so we're going to get like Christmas Chronicles Rondo of Blood? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Okay.
To be perfectly honest, a Santa Claus movie where Santa Claus has to save Christmas from vampires sounds like the greatest thing in the world to me. However, I don't trust Chris Columbus and Netflix to pull that off, so it's a mixed bag.
Where's my Castlevania animated series Christmas special?
Let's get Adi Shankar on the phone. Maybe he can help us out.
All right, so I think we can all agree, we're going to crankometer this movie in a moment, but we agree that the Santa is very good. Maybe the best Santa we've been presented with so far.
So far.
The field of competition is very dire, don't get me wrong. But
let's talk about that for a minute, because like Kurt Russell aside, who do you think has been the best Santa Claus we've seen so far on this show?
I could see John Goodman doing this role and it being a slightly lesser movie.
No. I'm saying of the movies we've watched, who has been the best Santa Claus thus far?
Who has been the best Santa Claus?
Like, which other Santa can compete with this Kurt Russell Santa?
I mean, the Santas in Arthur Christmas were pretty good from a comedic standpoint.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, I'll give you that.
I still say I love John Goodman as Santa, but in like that, what is it, Christmas that a Year Without Santa Claus?
He was just such a
surly, bitter asshole that it kind of, you know, poisoned the well for John Goodman Santa.
Yeah,
I'll be honest. I had forgotten about that movie entirely until you said that just now.
What other Santas do we have? Tim Allen Santa.
No. Tim Allen Santa,
which we agree is the worst Santa. You heard it here first.
I'm okay. Tim Allen is the most '90s Santa, which is definitely not a compliment.
Yeah,
not at all a compliment. Also, hey, speaking of John Goodman Santa, wasn't John Goodman also a robot Santa on Futurama?
Yes, he was.
He was, and that was a good Santa. That was a great Santa.
Okay.
What else we have? We haven't watched Elf, but there's what's his face? Cosgrove from Freakazoid. What's the actor?
Ed Asner.
Ed Asner Santa is a great Santa.
We have not talked much about Elf on this show, but let me say this: I kind of think Ed Asner is the best part of that movie.
I mean, he's kind of the perfect Santa.
I'm like, very conflicted
in a classical Santa sense.
I'm very conflicted about Elf, but he is very good in that movie.
Yeah. No, Elf is the elephant in the room. Thank you.
God.
You can send all of the accolades to my account. I'm at Fragrant Hills on Twitter. You're welcome.
You pulled that one so hard, some of my teeth came out with it. Oh my god.
Ed Asner's a good classic Santa, but I think Kurt Russell's a better cool Santa.
Yeah, I think when you're trying to make a Santa that's cool, you can definitely overdo it. And this Santa Claus kind of goes a little bit more surly and belligerent than Tim Allen does, I think. But he makes it cool because, like, he's just in it to have a good time.
Yeah, Tim Allen has this weird bitter negativity towards it where Kurt Russell just strikes you as, like, you know, your grumpy uncle, where Tim Allen's just your drunk uncle.
Yeah.
I can
Tim Allen's Santa is just an asshole, but Kurt Russell's Santa is, like,
a lovable asshole.
He's, like, down to go to Margaritaville at, like, 10 p.m. on Christmas Eve. He's here to hang. He's here to have a good time. He may be a little rough around the edges, but he's lovable, you know?
Yeah, this is the Santa I can have a beer with.
Exactly. He is the Santa that you could have a beer with. Kurt Russell's Santa Claus for president, 2020.
Let's do it. I'm down.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite Santas. Just wish it was in a better movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty much the agreement there. So yeah, I guess we're going to jump over to the crankometer unless anybody else has any
I just have a few business. A few last points.
Yeah.
Out of all the product placement in here, Sony, Good and Plenty, Milk Duds, somehow even though they bring up the soda Santa a lot, they actually didn't get Coke. It was just generic Santa Cola.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a scene. Okay, so the Santa in this movie is a little bit what's the word? He's a little bit peeved.
Bitter about his depiction.
He's bitter that they depict him fatter than he is. So there's a scene where the Santa's sleigh crashes through a Santa Claus billboard, and it crashes right through the stomach, and Santa loves it.
Yeah.
Oh man, he's it's very good. The other bit of product placement that I noticed is that when they're stealing the car from the bar early on, the valet is too busy watching Stranger Things on his
iPad.
It's very blatantly CGI'd onto his iPad too. Like it's
absolutely it is.
Like nobody could hook up the Wi-Fi so he could just natively watch Stranger Things on an iPad. Or maybe it just didn't show up well on screen and they had to CG it later. I don't know.
So that leads a little more credence to maybe this wasn't produced explicitly for Netflix, but they felt the need to put a Netflix cameo in it.
I would have liked that scene better if you just heard some dialogue from Stranger Things so you could just be like yourself, oh, that's Stranger Things, I recognize that, instead of
rather than putting Dustin like front and center on the screen or whatever.
No, honestly, like the clip that they showed, everybody watching this film on Netflix knows that scene and knows that line. It's the scene where Dustin screams, "She's our friend and she's crazy." Everybody watching that knows that. I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you didn't need the video.
Exactly.
This is just getting into pure nitpicking, but I just want to complain about, out of all of Santa's magic nonsense, the tracker for the bag is just a hot or cold device.
Yeah, for real.
That bugged me too, because like they're flying through downtown and they're using the tracker device, and then Teddy says, "Let's land so that we can get a better lay of the land." Like, no, why would you not fly around? Why would that not work better? It was a lazy way of saying, hey, we need to get to the next scene. Let's just land the plane.
And hey, we need to make it easy for these thugs to kidnap me and the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
a thug finder.
Did you guys watch this with closed captioning on at all?
I did.
Did you notice that capital T, capital B, true believer? Oh,
yes. Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that.
Very, very briefly.
The big book of true believers. And Kate opens it up and discovers her entire family tree in one page of the book. Every one of them is true believers except for Teddy. Teddy's name is absent. And that's kind of like the last sort of little bit of the movie is Santa helping Teddy realize that he can do anything he sets his mind to. Because as his dad kind of gives him early in the film, his dad gives him a Swiss Army knife with an inscription that says, "A Pierce always sees it through." And Santa wants to help him realize that. And that kind of helps Teddy become a true believer.
And Teddy is written into the book at the very end of the movie.
Did either of you
with
guys...
With a weird St. Peter type analogy.
Yeah, yeah. But did either of you guys, when you saw the phrase true believers, immediately think of Stan Lee?
I did not think of Stan Lee.
I thought of, my mind went to this, just some chosen one nonsense.
My mind went to Christian fundamentalism and true believers there.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, I
being given my upbringing.
Fair enough.
The wheat from the chaff.
Your reading of it is more valid than mine. So I'm just gonna concede that.
I'm just gonna read a section of my notes here that I took. One line says, "I did not need or want cartoon elves," and the next line is, "I did not need or want the cartoon elves to floss."
Yeah.
Yep. The one last point I want to bring up for myself is, considering this is Kurt Russell, I'm surprised there were no references to either The Thing or Backdraft. Like, ooh. I'm surprised the screenwriter didn't just do a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge, "Hey, Dad, remember those movies?"
Good on them for having some constraint.
Yeah.
Or even, like, you know, he was in Tombstone, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, like, yeah, the more dad movies of Kurt Russell's.
I'm thinking specifically of Backdraft because of the dead firefighter thing, and and The Thing because of South Pole Santa being like, "Oh, the North Pole is a lot better than the South Pole."
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen Santa Claus wearing a sombrero at some point in this movie. That would have been great. my in last Mexico note. City. Yeah, Mexico City. Yeah, it would have been perfect. My last
he would
note.
Have teleported back to the sleigh, and he's wearing a sombrero.
Yep.
Anyways,
we need to kill that dog. Anyway, the last note that I wrote it in all caps because this mattered to me. I wrote, "Why does the score constantly quote 'God Bless America'?" Because it does. The musical score, like at certain moments, you'll hear like da 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 da, and I kept thinking of "God Bless America." And I don't know why.
All right.
I mean, I guess this is a Santa I can believe in. So I don't know. Getting the
running up for Kurt Russell's 2020 campaign. This is all just a tactic.
Exactly. Started with the exploratory committee, ended up making a movie. Something went a little astray here.
I would vote for Santa Claus 2020. Calling
I
it now.
Kurt Russell 2020. I mean,
that too.
He's better than the current guy. Am I right? Am I right, guys?
Whoa.
All right.
Let's talk politics
for
a minute.
Hey. Politics. Classic uninformed millennial here.
I know. Right? All right. So, yeah, let's jump over to the crankometer now. This is our patented ranking system for scoring these Christmas films on an X and Y axis because we're crazy people. The X axis is how Christmassy a movie is versus the Y axis, which is how good a film is. So, gentlemen, on the x-axis, how Christmassy is The Christmas Chronicles?
It's pretty Christmassy. This movie, to apply my classic litmus test, which I'm going to call the Bradford Principle from now on. Applying the Bradford Principle, this movie wouldn't have happened if it wasn't Christmas.
And you try,
which is already gains it a +2 points.
Yeah, statistically, yeah. Try to imagine a version of The Christmas Chronicles that happens, you know, in August.
The Arbor Day Chronicles.
The Arbor Day Chronicles, and Santa Claus has to save Arbor Day spirit.
There's not going to be a Flag Day.
The International Children's Day Chronicles.
American patriotism is at an all-time low. We have to do something.
I will add to it: this movie didn't use Christmas to cram a horrible message down your throat, like
Christmas
shoes. So we got to give it some props for that as well.
It didn't even have like the stupid usual bullshit about
no one said anything about the real reason.
Yes, the real reason, or we all need to band together and raise the Christmas spirit together. You know,
like I kind of checked out mentally for the scene at the church, but it didn't strike me as too bad.
No, the closest it comes is they walk up to the church. They don't actually go in.
Well, religious stuff aside, but like even the closest thing to the let's all sing together to raise Christmas spirit is the awesome ass musical number in the jail cell.
Yeah,
which
true.
Is very good from a comedic standpoint.
True, yeah.
You know?
But
I'm gonna give this at least a 3.
I'm good with a 3. I would almost give it a 4 just because it does so much of what like other Santa Claus movies have done, but also does them a little more in a more entertaining fashion and plays more with the possibilities of it. So I'm gonna say it's a 4. Like I really love the scene in the bar when Santa Claus is appealing to everybody's like childhoods to help him out.
Yeah.
I love that.
Johnny 5.
I'll go with a 4.
3 or 4.
I'll go with a 4.
All right. I'm amenable to a 4. Cool. That's cool with me.
All right, a four it is. So then on the y-axis, this might be a little more contentious. How good actually is Christmas Chronicles?
It was better than I expected, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it from a standpoint where I expected the usual tripe that sometimes we watch on this show. Mm-hmm. And it was better than that, which I really shouldn't give it credit for, but Kurt Russell, like, they're fun parts of this movie.
Yeah.
I'll give it the kids drag it down and the CGI elves are terrible, but I'd almost give it a 1. Like,
yeah, like,
I kind of liked this movie.
I didn't mind it. I'll say that.
Okay, what did we give The Santa Claus? Because I want to say this movie's kind of what if The Santa Claus was good.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let me get back to our list here. The Santa Claus, we gave The Santa Claus a 5 and a 1.
We gave The Santa Claus a 1?
Yeah.
This has to be higher than that, then. This is a 2, at least.
I'm good with a 2. Like, I feel like the kids are the ones that drag this movie down, but they're kind of a necessary device, so you can't really do this movie without them.
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of kid actors, they're not the worst. I mean,
yeah, they're fine.
It's like I usually say about, like, a child actress, like, oh, someone's trying out for Annie.
Yeah.
What is the male child actor equivalent of that, by the way? Is it trying out for Newsies?
Ooh. Oliver. Oliver Twist.
Oh, there we go. Yes. Trying out for Andy or trying out for Oliver. So, well, he's halfway there with the dead parents, so one more to go.
Please, please, Santa, I want some more.
Hey, Lydia, now we both have dead moms. Anyways.
I'll go with a 2, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it exceeded my very low expectations, and... Yeah, the elves were just terrible, just in concept.
In principle and in execution, they were just the worst.
Yeah, like one scene of the elves would have been enough, but they just kept showing up.
Bring them back.
Bring it
for the minion-esque toyetic.
How do we get Santa out of the jail cell? Does he convince somebody that he's really Santa Claus? No, a CGI elf just chainsaws through the roof. Sure,
but
yet
not? Then he turns into oh wait, they throw the hat through the
yeah they bring opening. It they bring him that's the hat right. They bring him the hat, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, all right, yeah, whatever,
yeah, it's fine. Yeah, this I feel like this movie gets a 2. Like, it's I didn't mind it, but the things that bug me about it do drag it down just a little bit. I would be okay watching it again, but not anytime soon.
Yeah, if my little niece was like, hey, let's watch a Christmas movie, and we had Netflix, and I couldn't rent anything, I feel like I'd be okay watching this on, like, a couple days before Christmas.
It's like, yeah, are you old enough that I won't get in too much trouble for showing you Die Hard? Nah, not yet. We'll watch this instead.
Yeah,
that's,
pretty much.
That's fair. So yeah, a 4-2 on our crankometer scale. So Booker, wipe the slate clean and start over for 2019, because we got a whole year ahead of us here.
Oh dear.
Oh boy.
Thank you again. I don't know if did you guys formally thank him in Cobra?
I believe we did. No, no, okay. We didn't, because we didn't have it yet. So no.
Yeah.
Booker, thank you so much for being our resident crankometer generator. Booker has been putting it together, the official crankometer, for us for a few years now, and it's always fantastic. We've put him up on the website and on Twitter. Go check him out. Booker's good people.
You're doing God's work, and the best part about this year's crankometer, I must say, is the version of the movie poster for Jingle All the Way has been edited to say Arnold's after that toy again.
Yes, it's very good.
Which is amazing, and I love it, and you're the best, Booker, and yeah. I'm so glad we get to see
thank
you.
Thank you very much.
I will say that last year's crankometer was kind of, it was a real shotgun blast of just random movies, and the chart kind of reflects it, because they're all over the map. It was a good chunk of them that were not very Christmassy, but were pretty good, and then there was a big chunk of them that were super not Christmassy and super terrible, and not a whole lot in between. But we're looking to change that here in 2019. We've got some listener requests that we're definitely going to get to sooner rather than later. And we've got some fun stuff lined up.
We do Home for the Horror Days, and I'm not going to say any more than this, but I've got a whole monthly event planned out sometime earlier in the year. Please look forward to it.
I know what it is.
I am totally dibsing part of Home for the Horror Days and part of November. So
we have a little bit of a game plan. Like last year, I wrote down an entire chart of what I wanted us to cover and when, and we
I never read that chart.
We hit maybe
we did like what a third of it. Maybe
we hit maybe four of them.
Yeah,
like it's... okay, of the ones we had planned out, we definitely did The Sure Thing, Trading Places, Iron Man 3, and Pottersville. Everything else was and Jurassic World. Everything else was just like, yeah, whatever. Let's do something. So
if you don't deserve us at our worst, you don't deserve us at our best.
That's
so
true. If you don't like us at our The Sure Thing, you don't deserve us at our Better Watch Out.
Yeah.
Or maybe backwards. I don't know. Whatever. So yeah, this Christmas Creeps for January of 2019. We will be back in a couple of weeks with a brand new episode. We are excited to get 2019 off to a rocking start. We are members of the Christmas Podcast Network. It's kind of a little bit of a down period for the network right now because most of the shows have gone dormant. They've kind of gone into hibernation for...
All cowards.
They've gone into hibernation until probably October. A couple of us are still, you know, running shows year-round, so go check it out at christmaspodcastnetwork.com. You can find us on the internet at christmascreeps.com. We're on Twitter at christmascreeps. Email us questions or comments or recommendations for future episodes at xmascreeps@gmail.com. We have gotten some good and some negative feedback recently. You know, we'll take it all, whatever. We don't care. We love it all. We just like the people who are listening to the show.
We love it.
We love Christmas just like Randy Newman loves L.A. So... we're on Facebook, we're on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and all that fun stuff. So go like and subscribe and smash all the buttons. Just like Buddy the Elf in an elevator. Smash all the buttons. So for Christmas Creeps, I'm Joseph Wade.
I'm Santa.
I'm Bradford.
Here to say that 5 years in, we still don't have a proper send-off. So good night, everybody.
Joe's after that send-off again.
Happy Christmas! Happy Christmas!